Station number 14983, Albert Shippen, Reel 1.
Mr. Shippen, Reel 1. When and where were you born, Mr. Shippen?
On the 18th of June 1927, and I was born in Oxford Street in Spennymoor in County Durham.
What kind of a town was that?
Mostly it was built round a pit area where there was various mines and pits. There was a coke works, and it was well known for its steelworks because Bessemer had produced his Bessemer steel projects there.
What did your father do?
My father was a miner, and he had experience in the army as well. And during the First World War, he served with the Oxenbucks Light Infantry.
And he obviously came through the war all right.
Yes, he did indeed, yes.
Did your mother work?
No, she brought up a family of 10 people altogether.
How were they divided?
Well, I had 4 sisters and 6 brothers. But that was 2 families. She was first married to a chap called Williams, and they had 7 in family, and I had 2 sisters and myself when we were in the Shippens family. The two the brothers in my half brothers, I should have said, sorry, they, 2 of them were in the army. The first one, which was George Harold, he joined the army before the war. He served with the 1st Battalion in China and in the Sudan, and then went into the Middle East with Wavell's 30,000, but unfortunately he was captured and became a prisoner of war in Germany. Harry, the other brother, he enlisted into the TA in C Company in the 6th Battalion of Spennymoor. And he went away to France, but unfortunately on the retreat from Dunkirk was killed, and he is buried out in France.
Brothers and sisters, what kind of work were they in?
Well, their brothers were mostly miners, and the sisters in those days were the upstairs and downstairs. They were in service in most places as scullery maids or maids or what have we, but they worked in the majority of the big houses.
It was a very large family. How did your parents cope? Was there much money around?
No, I don't think there was. And unfortunately, my father died when I was 2, and then my mother coped till I was 9, but unfortunately she had a what we'd call called a deer, probably ulcer in a leg, and had all sorts of treatment but couldn't cure her, and in the end my 2 sisters and I became orphans at about 1937, but the family was kept together, and I went to live with my older stepbrother, and my 2 sisters went to live with 2 of the sisters.
What kind of a house did you live in the very beginnings of your life?
Well, mostly in Colry Rows, as they were known as in those days. It was a kind of a kitchen with probably a bit of a schoolroom, and a pantry, as it was known as in those days, and three bedrooms.
It was quite a large house for colliery people.
Oh yes, yes. They were mostly rented accommodation, and as I say, because of the size of the family, they had to have this accommodation. But there was, in those days, the back-to-back, as it was known, which was that up and down, and that was it. Gas lighting, electricity hadn't spread its wings so far in those days. Radios were driven by what was commonly known as the accumulator. It was known by the accumulator, and also the in those days those huge fireplaces with an oven on one side and a boiler on the other side, and coal was the heating fuel of the day. But unfortunately there was no such thing as baths, so we used to have bath nights at the boys at such and such a time, the girls at such and such a time, which had to be adhered to. Toilets were dry toilets, and they were obviously outside.
Did you get coal free from the pit?
Yes, there was concessionary coal, as the brothers that worked there were allowed so much coal, and you got that tipped every so often, which was today you wouldn't use the amount you did in those as you did in those days, because it was very free and easy to get hold of.
Food, were you well fed?
Yes, food, mainly basic food, as you can appreciate in those days. Butter used to come in huge barrels, and was patted by the grocer as you went in to buy it. Margarine and that was packed in, not so much as the packaging of today. They went in and bought it. Cheese was cut on the side. Bacon was cut by the slicer. It hung up in the shops, and what have we. Fruit was as seasonal, because there was no such thing as a refrigerator or pre-packing or anything like that. But the basic foods and that, and majority of people in those days had an allotment. And in the allotment, you found that the majority ran a few hens for the eggs, ran a pig or two for slaughtering, for this the supplement out with the foods and what have we, and rabbits was another big stable diet. And of course, in those days, you could buy fish and chips for tuppence.
What was the community like that you were living in? Was it a very closely knit community, supportive and helpful?
Well, I think if you look back at those days, you found out that a lot of the life in those kind of communities revolved around the Working Men's Club, which is a big organisation in the place we lived in, Spennymoor. The Miners' Union was very strong, and also the chapels and the churches. I was in the first Baptist Troop Boy Scouts, and where I first got the inkling of becoming a soldier, because when war was declared, the TA Centre at Spennymoor obviously became like the headquarters, and troops were billeted in schools and in church halls. Well, one of the things for us to get what we the term used in the scouting world was is your national service badge, along with other people in that. We used to report to the drill hall on our bikes and our uniforms and go dashing off to schools and church halls and the town hall, where the big cookhouse and dining room was for the troops, with messages and used as runners. And then again, later on, when Dunkirk took place, we did exactly the same kind of operation, and that's where I said, well, I think when I leave school, I'll join the army.
So then in the scouts, you had this little wartime job to do, in effect.
Oh, yes. We used to go and do ambulance classes with the St. John's Ambulance Brigade. We used to do RAP work with the area wardens and what have we. And we used to do the same kind of thing with the auxiliary fire service to enable men who were more capable of doing the hardiest tasks than running up and down the streets with the rattle and this kind of thing. We used to do it as Boy Scouts.
How old were you when you joined the Scouts?
Well, first of all, I was a cub, but at the time I'm talking about, I would think I'd be about 12-year-old when all this was taking place.
Did you have to buy your own uniform?
Oh, yes, yes. We had the old traditional Boy Scout uniform, which was the Baden-Powell hat, like the Mounties wear, and we had a shirt, short trousers, and stockings and shoes, and we had a neckerchief and a toggle and a lanyard.
Did you quite like the discipline of the troop, of the Scouts?
Well, it was because we used to do we used to have fatigue. We used to go for badges, which was tenderfoot badges, woodwork badges, first aid badges, and all those kind of things. And I think that helped you to develop yourself as far as your education was concerned. But also we went out camping and trekking, and we did concerts and so forth, and it was very well supported both by the parents and by the chapel which we originated from. I think the strongest organisation on that line in those days was the St Andrew's Church Lads Brigade, who were when they used to turn out for church parade on Sunday nights, was some spectacular thing to see. It was probably somewhere between 250 to 300 boys turned out to march to church on a Sunday evening with their band and drummers and bugles at the head, which was very, very impressive for the boys in those days.
But you weren't in the Boy Scout?
No, I wasn't in the Church Lads Brigade. No, I was a Boy Scout. I was in the Baptist. I used to go to the Baptist chapel.
Did you work through the grades of promotion within the Scouts?
Oh, yes. I was, I became a sixer in the Cubs, and then I became, I can't remember its title, but you got like one stripe on your pocket, that, and then you become, you got two stripes on your pocket. And I also used to go on and assist with the Cubs on the nights they were on as well. I think the word was when you got two stripes on your pocket, you were commonly known as a sixer.
Can we go back to your school days? Where did you start school?
Well, I first went to school at a little village called Binchester. Which is a bit of a pity that people don't recognise it for what it is, because there was an ancient Roman fort there, and the foundations and everything and that are well worth a visit. But that was a few miles outside of Spennymoor, and then we moved back into Spennymoor and to Bishop's Close, which was more or less in the centre of the town, and I went to King Street School. I failed me 11 plus. My education, I think, left very much to be desired. I was probably average on education. I didn't think much that in those days that education was so important as what I found out later on in life.
You didn't feel that any teacher had made a mark on you and to influence you in the future?
I can remember the names quite vividly. I mean, the headmaster was called Hopper, and the latest teachers that as I went through into from the junior school into the senior school. Parker and Nunn and so forth and that. I think they were all teachers that were admired, and I think that under the circumstances, if you can appreciate that our last couple of years at school was absolutely horrific, because we had to adapt ourselves into a different environment. The Blue Coat School from Gateshead were evacuated into the town of which we lived at Spennymoor. Now, we had to share the school with the Blue Coat School from Bensham in Gateshead. And 1 week we would have the classrooms on the morning, and the next week they would have the classroom, we'd change around and have the classrooms on the afternoon. Now, two schools going together, although we weren't, the schools were never closed down except for a period of time when troops were in certain parts of it, that we still had to go to school. Now, you could just imagine that two schools meeting, and it was their classroom for the morning, we would have to find some way of being taught in the main hall, which where the assembly was. Also the fact that teachers were being called up and auxiliaries were being brought in. There was also, even as early in the war as that, such thing as paper, pencils, and such things, aids and that you needed for education, were cut down to a minimum.
What was the discipline like?
Well, I would say that the feel of the cane determined a lot of boys from committing any serious things, but of course you still got people caned for being inattentive in class, or being cheeky to the teacher, or persistently late, or fighting when you shouldn't have been doing it, which is but I don't think that anybody received any excessive punishment, and I think that the education, as I say, tried, the people who were educated and the educators tried their best under the circumstances of which prevailed at that moment of time.
What was the discipline in the home that you were getting? Was your father died, you said, when you were two?
Well, I think the thing was that in those days everybody knew everybody, and I think that if you stepped out of line, it didn't take long, as we know it today, as it began the grapevine, that someone would come in, your brother or your sister would come in and say, so and so told me that you'd been scrumping, or you were in the park and you were walking over the grass where you shouldn't have been. And not to be mischievous, Enad, I think that people respected each other, and I think that people respected each other's properties, and they wanted you to grow up to have the same attitude.
Coming up to the war, of course, you were still a young boy. Was it obvious to yourself, or were you hearing things which made you believe that some kind of conflict was coming?
Oh, I think that the majority of boys, even at that young age, because of the ARP and the issuing of such things as shelters, the Anderson shelters, and what have we, and gas masks were being issued, and precautions were being taken. People, conscription was had been introduced and was going in, and people were walking about in uniform and this kind of thing. And that the wireless projected all the goings on at Austria being taken over, and the Sudeten lands and all this kind of thing. And I think the schools as well, in those days, because I suppose we weren't continental minded like we are today, tried to project to us the difference, because we were an island against what they were as the continent of Europe, and tried to explain to us that things were different, And they could move from country to country without having to cross the channel or anything. Kind of. I think that, yes, I think the majority of people did. And a lot of people also, if you work back, the Second World War hadn't all finished all that far away, and there's still people remembered of that kind of thing, and people were joining the Territorial Army, with big programs going on regarding that kind of thing, and British Legions, and yes, everybody was fully aware of the situation, I would reckon, even boys. And we used to make model aeroplanes, the Spitfire, and the Hurricane, and so forth, and the Swordfish, such things as we had, Handley Page bombers, and swap them around in schools. Cigarette cards was another thing that we used to save and swap, which predicted different things appertaining to that, yes.
Was there any attempt as a child to you being told that the Germans were not particularly nice, your enemies?
Well, I think...
Before the war started, I'm coming up to the war
itself. Oh, yes, I think one of the things that we learned very, very rapidly being Boy Scouts and being in the Baptist chapel, and I think the chapels and that, and the Rechabites and what have we, those kind of people, really. We learned very, very quickly at the chapels and this kind of thing about Hitler Youth, about strength through joy kind of business, and how the Germans had instilled internationalism into them and all this kind of thing. And I think, yes, we, and particularly in the Scout movement, we were very, very aware of the situation regarding the youth.
Did you look upon this as rather strange behaviour for a country to be doing to its youth? Did it contrast with what you were doing in your own minds?
Well, I think the point about it is that we were in the Scouts because we wanted to be Scouts, or the Boys Brigade or the Rechabites or whatever they were in. Where there, we seemed to get the impression that they were more or less had to attend these things. And nationalism and this kind of thing was alien to even to us. And of course, one of the things in those days which was even brought out was the treatment of the Jews and the Gypsies and people that were deformed and all this kind of thing, and mentally, you know, were being ill-treated. I think that was alien to everybody that came across it and learned about it.
So this was rather effective propaganda that was going on prior to the war itself, that was reaching you.
Oh, I would think so, yes. And I think on top of that, the armed forces were having many drives at join the forces, and in particularly the TA, the local units, getting people to come along and offering such things as £5 a year bounty with free uniforms and going to camp and this kind of, which was probably an interesting factor to people who'd worked down the mines all their lives.
When did you start work?
I didn't go to work at all.
So what age were you when you left school?
14.
So at 14 years of age, you went where? Straight into the army?
Yes. I was 14 on the 18th of August. Sorry, on the 18th of June. And I joined the army. I reported to Bransworth on the 15th of August, 1941.
Now, you said it was your scouts' activities that had encouraged you with the thought of going into the forces. Were there any other influences upon you for going into the army? Obviously, the war was on.
Well, I think from my scouts' days and this kind of thing, I used to frequent the drill hall quite often, because the PSI at that time was called Alan Blackwood. And I went to school with his son Raymond, and we used to go, when the territorials were training in the park or in the drill hall, we used to go and watch them. And probably at 14 year old, I knew as much about the Bren gun and the rifle and bugle calls as what many of the territorials did.
Did you look upon it as some kind of an exciting adventure that lay ahead of you, if you joined?
Well, I looked upon it like this. I had a to think of what my future was going to be. I know the fact that I'd been an orphan, and of course my other brothers and sisters had their families and this kind of thing. I thought it was a way of going out on my own, stand on my own, make my own future, and do my own thing. And I would think that had quite a bit to do with why I joined the army straight away. And I had probably a father and mother and this kind of thing. I probably wouldn't have took that monumental decision. But I never regretted it.
There was no influence from the other members of your family that you were too young and you shouldn't do it?
No, I think it was the other way around. I was insisting that I wanted to go out into the world and stand on my own two feet. And I thought that would give me independence. That's why I decided I'd join the army.
By then, had you lost your half-brother that I think you said was killed in Dunkirk? Or
yes.
And that didn't influence you in any way?
No, I think that you accepted that as he volunteered, he joined the territorial army, he went, and it was, you know, in those days, units were raised locally. And therefore, they went as pals and everything, joined the local TA units. And because of the disaster of the retreat from Dunkirk, there was numerous people reported dead and missing in this kind of thing. And I think that helped really in a way to soften the blow, that it wasn't one individual person that you knew. There'd been a lot of people who'd had very bad news due to the retreat.
It was all pretty bad news at this time, wasn't it? Thinking back again, how was that affecting people around you? Was there a feeling that we're going to lose the war?
I think at some time or other, Russian had come in very strictly, and I think. Although I may be jumping a little bit ahead, because the units had been raised locally, it did have a very contrast regarding morale, because even if the 6th Battalion C Company, which was raised in Spain, went into action and a few people would become casualties, everybody knew everybody else, and for you knew in a community of say 30,000 people, it wouldn't be far short to say that 5,000 of those people knew somebody and this kind of thing. And it was a bad thing. And the other thing which was quite devastating was in those days regimental numbers were issued, and the Durham Light Infantry always started off with 444. And when newspaper reports and that, even from Spennymoor, you went away to other units in Durham or Gateshead and that, you saw this list of names. And as soon as you saw the regiment number 444, you appreciated the fact that the units had been into action and it was very demoralising on that front, and I think it was a good thing when they stopped issuing regimental numbers.